It's some salt pork and some biscuits, she said. Mr. Corbin said for you to take it long, and that you'd be liable to need provisions if it's a long chase. She touched Pye's arm. Do you think it will be?
All I could do was shake his head helplessly. I honestly don't know. I've never chased no Comanches before.
She came up on her toes and brushed her lips across his. Be careful, she said in a half whisper that was thick with emotion. Please, be careful, Pye.
I will. You got my word on that.
And good luck. She glanced over her shoulder at the still sobbing Tad Harrigan. I don't want to be crying over you like that boy's crying over his family. In a very short amount of time, the Rangers were ready to ride. Griffin led the way on the big sorrel paint, Sizzle, flanked by Pye and Kurt. The other men, nine in all, followed behind them, stretching out the line a little so they wouldn't be too bunched up in case of trouble. The group rode south, following the eastern bank of the Brazos.
The Harrigan spread is about 5 miles this way, Griffin explained to Pye. We'll cross the river there so we can pick up the tracks of the Comanches. It shouldn't be too hard.
You really think we can catch 'em?
Pye asked.
I think there's a good chance. They'll have a small herd of horses and cattle, and that'll slow 'em down some. Man, they don't get in a hurry unless they know someone is after 'em.
Griffin waved a hand toward the land on the other side of the river.
They still regard all of that as their own personal hunting grounds, all the way to New Mexico territory. It would be undignified for them to run away while they're on their own land. That's the way their attitude strikes me, anyway.
You fought Injuns before?
That's right. The state government has rangers stationed in all the counties north and south of here, forming a sort of line all the way from the Red River to the Rio Grande. We're that line, and it's our job to keep the Injuns on the west side of it, so everything east will be safe for settlement.
Griffin shook his head.
But there aren't enough of us, and you've seen for yourself that the line can be broken from time to time. When that happens, all we can do is try to chase down the raiders and make them pay for what they've done.
A short time later, they came inside of a lonely cabin. The corner of one wall and part of the roof had been scorched by the flames that Tad Harrigan had extinguished before they could destroy the whole structure. Two shapes lay sprawled in front of the cabin.
Damn it,
Griffin said as he caught sight of something moving around the bodies.
The buzzards are already at him. Come on.
He heeled his horse into a run, with Pye and the Rangers following. Ugly black birds rose into the sky as the pounding hoofbeats approached, abandoning the corpses on which they had been feeding. As Pye reined in, he tore his horrified gaze away from what had been done to the faces of the man and the girl who had been killed by the Comanches.
Tad lost his head, Griffin said in disgust. He should have at least covered him up before he left. We'll do that now. That's all we have time for. Quirk can take care of the rest when he and the other boys get here.
A couple of the Rangers went into the cabin and came back out with their arms full of blankets. They spread the coverings over the two corpses, piling them thick so that the buzzards couldn't get at them again. Pye stayed in the saddle, knowing that there was nothing he could do to help here. The damage had been done already. As Griffin had said, all the Rangers could accomplish now was to try to settle the score for these murdered settlers and maybe hit the Comanche raiders hard enough to make the next war party think twice about venturing across the Brazos. When the grim task of covering the bodies was completed, the Rangers rode down to the river, following a path that slanted down the bank to the water. The stream bed was at least 100 yards wide, but not all of it was covered with water. Several sandbars were visible.
Follow me, Griffin said over his shoulder to Pye. There's quicksand out there, so you have to know where you're going.
Pye nodded and kept his horse right behind the captain's mount. The rest of the group formed a line behind him. The water was shallow most of the way, but it grew deep enough in the main channel so that the horses were forced to swim. The men held their weapons and ammunition over their heads to keep the powder dry. When the riders emerged from the river, water streamed from their clothes. The hot Texas sun began to dry them almost right away. They rode through the cottonwood trees on the west bank and emerged onto a grassy plain, dotted with clumps of post oaks, cedars, and mesquites. It took only a few minutes of searching for the keen eyes of Griffin and the other rangers to locate the tracks left behind by the Comanche raiding party and the stolen livestock they were driving before them. Griffin set the pace, and it was a fast one. As Pi had expected, Sizzle seemed tireless. The large man was accustomed to riding, but not at such a swift gait. He hoped he would be able to keep up. The other men talked little amongst themselves. For the most part, they rode in a solemn silence. The task that had brought them here was serious business, and that responsibility weighed heavily on each one. The morning passed, and the sun climbed until it was directly overhead, and beating down with a brassy heat. There were large circles of sweat on Pi's shirt, and he wished he had one of those broad-brimmed hats like the Rangers wore. If he was going to stay here in Texas, he would have to get one of them, he thought. He tried to watch the tracks, but he couldn't always see them. Evidently, the trail was plain as day to Griffin, though. The captain never slowed except occasionally, and that was just to give the horses a breather. Griffin called a short halt early in the afternoon when the Rangers came to a small winding creek. The horses drank from the stream and grazed a little, while the men made a quick lunch from the salt pork and biscuits in the bag Pi carried on his saddle. Pi washed his food down with a long swig from his canteen, then asked Griffin,
"How much longer do you think it'll be before we catch up to 'em?"
"Those tracks aren't much more than an hour old," Griffin said, "and neither are the droppings the Indian ponies left. We'll push on as fast as we can, so we ought to spot 'em before dark."
"What happens when we do?"
"When they see us, most of 'em will turn back to fight, while a few, usually the youngest ones, will keep pushing the horses and cattle on toward their home. It'll be up to us to brush past the defenders and take back the herd."
"That's what we're really after, then," Pi said. "The stolen livestock."
"Not entirely. We'll have to kill or at least wound some of the Injuns to take back that stock. You have to understand how important it is to them, though, especially the horses. When a raiding party sets out to steal horses and comes back empty-handed, it's a shameful thing. That'll hurt their pride as much, or more, than killing some of them."
"That's important. Hurting their pride."
Griffin took his hat off and wiped sweat from the band inside it.
"Well, think about it, Pi. The Comanches can't win, not in the long run. There are too few of them, and too many of us. But they can make life miserable and dangerous for the settlers out here, and delay the spread of civilization for a long time, unless their spirit is broken, unless they realize they're fighting a losing battle and give up. That's why we strike at their pride, to hasten the process and save lives on both sides."
Pi frowned and rubbed his beard.
"I reckon that makes sense," he said slowly. "Seems like sort of a shame to fight that way, though."
"You mean it's better to kill a man than to make him feel like a failure as a warrior?"
"Well, when you put it that way, no, hell, I don't know, Captain. I'm the peaceable sort myself. I'd just as soon not to have to fight with anybody."
"You volunteer to come along with us?"
"Yeah, because I stick by my friends, and you fellows have been good to me and Rachel. Don't worry, Captain. When push comes to shove, I'll do my part."
Griffin grinned and thumped a fist lightly on Pi's shoulder.
"I wasn't worried, Pi. I know you're a fighting man. Rangers never let each other down."
Pi frowned and was about to ask what Griffin meant by that. But before he could, the captain turned away and called,
"Mount up. We're riding."
Again, the group took up the trail. And now, after horses and men had rested for a short time, the pace once again was fast. Pi ignored the aches and pains caused by the hard riding and did his best to keep up. Several more hours rolled by. The terrain grew more rugged the farther the Rangers went from the Brazos River. It was still flat for the most part, but hills and rocky ridges jutted up more often and were more thickly wooded. The ground under the hooves of the horses turned to a hard red clay. Gullies choked with brush slashed the landscape and sometimes had to be gone around. It was harder for even the sharp eyes of Captain Griffin to follow the tracks left by the Comanches.